Welcome back, Gemar Chasima Tova. What a pleasure to see everyone once again. And I hope you had a meaningful, uplifting, and elevating Rosh Hashanah that is only going to propel us into Aseres Yemei Tshuva and to a special experience over Yom HaKippurim as well. Just a reminder, this evening Rabbi Yisachar Frand will be speaking here in our shul for men and for women at 8 p.m. Every year it is a highlight of our Tshuva season. Rabbi Fran needs no introduction to our community or to any of the communities around our neighborhood, and we encourage everyone to participate this evening for the very meaningful presentation. So it's Aseres Yemei Tshuva. The question is, what exactly should we be thinking about? I assume we should be thinking about something, but what should that something be? So we look in the words of Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah was one of the greatest of the Rishonim. He passed away in 1264. He lived in Spain. He was a cousin of the Ramban. He was the Rebbe of the Rashba, one of the most famous Rishonim that we are familiar with. And what makes him particularly important for this time of year is that Rabbeinu Yonah authored a very, monumental sefer called Shaarei Tshuva. The Shaarei Tshuva basically walks us through the process of tshuva. So we don't have an opportunity to go through the whole sefer today, because of course that would take a long time. All I want to do is take one paragraph that he has when he talks about what should we be thinking about during Aseres Yemei Tshuva. And I was very taken by his words. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, during Aseres Yemei Tshuva, of course, we have some people who don't take it seriously. That's not who we're discussing. Leave them out of the equation. He says, Hayari es Devar Hashem. Somebody who is serious, somebody who understands Rosh Hashanah, Aseres Yemei Tshuva, Yom HaKippurim, somebody who gets what's going on. What should he be thinking? Number one, he says, in our minds it should be an understanding, Shekol Maisa B'Sefer Nechtavim. We should think about the reality that everything that we do throughout the course of the year, but certainly during this week, is going to be documented. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu at this time of the year is reviewing everything from the entire year, all of our experiences, the good ones, the ones that may not be as good. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, it's very simple. We all know that we have Gzar Din Rosh Hashanah, and then the Chasima ends on Yom Kippur, so obviously this time is somewhere in the middle, and we have to remember that everything from the entire year is going to be reviewed. Okay, that we all know. However, says Rabbeinu Yonah, Ba'es asher yeda ha'adam ki aviyu es dino lifnei melech basar v'adam. When a person knows that they are about to stand in front of a king, and I often think from my own experience, if I'm going to stand in front of a judge, so I only had to do it one time, it was very late at night, I was driving home from a shul, Simcha, and I was going a little too quickly, and I got stopped by a police officer, and I was terrified. Why was I so scared? I'm not sure, but I was terrified. I told the guy, I'm telling you, I'm really not a bad person, I don't speed that often, I'm just really exhausted, and I want to get home, and I've been working all day. And he said, okay, but I stopped you, and I already wrote down your license plate. It was really nice. So he said, I'm going to give you a ticket, but go to court and see what happens. Okay, I've never done this before. So I go to court, and I'm terrified. And I thought to myself afterward, why am I terrified? What's going to happen? Worst case scenario. Worst case scenario is it's a fine. 2 points on my license, which don't matter if you don't get extra points. So what's the worst case scenario that I'm facing right now? Not a prison sentence, not my license being revoked, and yet I'm standing there terrified, not sure why. Finally, they call me up. The judge looks at my story, and the cop didn't show up. So he says, okay, you're dismissed. And that was that. So, says Rabbeinu Yonah, if you've ever had an experience, or if you know anybody that ever had to stand before a judge for something maybe more serious than what I describe, you understand and you know that that person is trying to figure out every possible potential way that they could get around this issue. What are they going to do? What is the best possible scenario I can set up that things can be okay. Now, it doesn't always end up being okay, but people try to prepare. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, and therefore, lo tale al rucho lifnos al yamin ul al smol ulis asek bi yeser chafetzav. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, can you imagine that person who's about to go on trial is going to be busy worrying about the iced coffee and the gym? Really? It's not what they're thinking about. It's really not what they're thinking about. It's not the furthest thing from their mind right now is the many different variations of iced coffee that they have on Central Avenue. Really not what's on their mind. As important as it is, but in the scheme of life, it's not so important. And therefore, he says, a person during this time of year at least should have some kind of focus. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, Roy lechol yirei Elokim. Anyone who takes this time of year seriously should try lema'et ba'asakav. Shouldn't work so much. Now, says Rabbeinu Yonah, if I have a job and I need to go to work, I can't call in sick. But that shouldn't be our focus. That's not the focus. So I'm thinking about the words of Rabbeinu Yonah. And he says how we should be trying to frame our own minds. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, who can possibly go to work during Aseres Yemei Tshuva? So I'm thinking, so everybody's going to go to work. Who can possibly go for an iced coffee during Aseres Yemei Tshuva? If Rabbeinu Yonah says, don't even go to work, how can I do other things that are not important like work? Who's thinking about this during Aseres Yemei Tshuva? Who has a head for that? I read a story the other day about the great Baal Musar of Yisrael Salanter. Imagine there was a guy who on Erev Rosh Hashanah bumps into Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Can you imagine what Rabbi Yisrael Salanter looked like on Erev Rosh Hashanah? The father of the Musar movement. Where his head was, I don't know, what he's thinking about, all kinds of things. And this person is getting dressed for Yom Tov and stressing that they can't find the tie that they had bought specifically for Rosh Hashanah. Going through the closet, rummaging through all the bags that they had, they couldn't find it, just can't find it. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter happens to walk by, sees this person is in a frenzy, asks him, is everything okay? How can I help you? I can't find my tie! So Rabbi Yisrael Salanter is walking to shul, about to go daven Ma'ariv on Leil Rosh Hashanah, and he bumps into this person who's stressing out about his tie. You can't even begin to explain to the person how many things are wrong about why he's stressed about this. Some people just don't get it. Other people get it a little bit. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter gets it a lot. So we're not Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. And we're not Rabbeinu Yonah. And we're not going to stay home from work the whole week. And we're not going to sit in our room and cry all day and night about all the terrible things we have done. It's just not us. Let's be real. But what is us is at least to take some sense of what Rabbeinu Yonah writes and have an understanding that this time of the year cannot be the same as every other time that we experience in the year. In fact, I saw a fascinating discussion. The Rebbe of the Ramchal was a Talmud Chacham by the name of the Mahari Basan. The Mahari Basan was asked the following question. We know that on Rosh Chodesh, or on Yom Tov, or on Shabbos, whenever a person sits down to a meal, and they have to bench Birchas HaMazon, we add Ritzei, Yala V'Yavo, we add all kinds of different insertions, all kinds of different supplements to the benching during special times of the year. Why don't we add anything to the benching during Aseres Yemei Tshuva? Isn't it interesting? We add to the davening, we say Zachreinu L'chaim, HaMelech HaKadosh. Why don't we have some kind of demarcation to let us know that during Aseres Yemei Tshuva, the benching is different? And this is not a regular time of the year, just like we would say Yalav Yavah on Rosh Chodesh, just like we would say Ritzei on Shabbos. Why do we leave out the insertions during the Birchas HaMazon? Interesting question. And he gives all kinds of technical answers to explain why it wouldn't be appropriate to do so. Okay, bottom line, he says, you know what the real reason is? Forgetting all the technicalities about whether it fits into the categories and does the halacha assume it's the right thing to do or not. Bottom line, he says, you know what the simplest answer is? Because who could he eat during Aseres Yemei Tshuva? Who's not fasting during Aseres Yemei Tshuva? And therefore he writes, why would Chazal have instituted some kind of supplement for Birchas HaMazon during Aseres Yemei Tshuva, for the couple of people who are going to be eating during Aseres Yemei Tshuva? What? Who could imagine such a thing? You're going to go out to eat in a restaurant during Aseres Yemei Tshuva? I love all the restaurants and all the proprietors in our neighborhood, but really? You're going to go sit on Central Avenue in a restaurant during Aseres Yemei Tshuva like there's nothing better to do? This is why, he writes, there was no decision by Chazal to put in any kind of insertion during Aseres Yemei Tshuva for the Birchas HaMazon, because it didn't dawn on them that anyone would sit down to a big meal during Aseres Yemei Tshuva. Who's going to do that? Of course, we need to take care of ourselves. But why do we have to make something for Birchas HaMazon? Amazing perspective. Yesterday in the Slichos of Tzom Gedalia, I don't know how many of you were in shul, but even if you weren't, you can go back into the Slichos and look at one of the things that we said, which is an entire piyut. It's an entire Slicha that talks all about the history of those who did terrible things and how their tshuva was accepted. So the piyut starts with Adam HaRishon, as we know, was created, Yitzir Kapav Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Ribono Shel Olam created Adam HaRishon. Things went downhill very quickly with him. Vini siso b'mitzvah kala v'oso lo notzar. You tested him with one small instruction, and even that, Adam HaRishon and Chava could not figure out how to stay within the guidelines of what they were instructed to do and not to. Okay. Adam HaRishon does tshuva, and his tshuva is accepted. Then it goes on and it says about Cain. Cain kills his brother. Cain does some kind of tshuva. Kadosh Baruch Hu accepts it. Then it goes further and it tells us about Reuven. Now, we don't know exactly what Reuven did wrong, but Yaakov Avinu was upset at him for something. It seems that he was disrespectful to his father. As a result of that, Reuven does some kind of tshuva. His tshuva is accepted. Who is the next person who does something wrong? Yehuda. Yehuda also is involved in some kind of uncomfortable situation. We don't know what happened there with Tamar. How did he get involved? Why did he get involved? Big discussion in the Gemara. But the bottom line is Yehuda takes responsibility, does tshuva. Everything's okay. All right. Here comes the surprising comment of the piyut we said yesterday. We then describe someone by the name of Ben Amri, who is a tremendous Rasha. Who is Ben Amri? You ever heard of him? You have heard of him, just you don't know who his father was. The piyut doesn't want to mention him by name because he's such an awfully terrible person. Who is Ben Amri? Achav. Achav Ben Amri. Let's learn a little bit of Tanakh to understand who Achav actually was. Achav was one of the worst people ever to live. So much so that the Mishnah says in Maseches Sanhedrin in the last parak that we have an idea, Kol Yisrael Yesh Lahem Chelek Le'olam Haba. Every Jew has a portion in the world to come, and one of the three exceptions that is mentioned there is Achav. Achav was so horrendous, Achav was so terrible, he does not have a portion in the world to come. And yet, in the Slicha and the Piyut that we said yesterday, it seems to imply that Achav does some kind of tshuva, may not be a perfect tshuva, but he did something, and the Ribono Shel Olam accepted it. So let's just try to study just a little bit the story of Achav and see what we can learn from him. Says the Gemara, just to give us a background, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan tells us about the life of Achav. Ein lecha kol telem v'telem be'eretz Yisrael. Telem means a mound. There was no mound in the entire country, all over Eretz Yisrael. Shelo hamid alav Achav avodas kochavim v'yishtachav elo. Achav did not just serve avodah zarah. Achav then went and shared this propensity of avodah zarah all over the country. And on every mound, every place he went, he constructed an avodah zarah and he bowed down to it. Not he made a mistake one time. Not he made a personal mistake for himself. No, that wasn't enough. He made the mistake a million times, and he tried to get everybody to be galvanized to come along with him and to violate all the terrible sins that he was doing along with him. He didn't want to do it alone. That was Achav. Okay. So what's the story with Achav? Says the Gemara, isn't that an interesting name? Have you ever heard of the name Achav? Now, you've never heard of it because we don't name our children after him. But the Gemara wants to get back to the original etymology of the name. Where did it come from? What kind of name is Achav? Says the Gemara, it's simple. It's made up of two words. We all know both words. What are they? Ach and Av. So he's called a brother and a father. Why is he called a brother and a father? Lots of brothers and fathers in the world. So why do you call him the brother and father? No, no, no. Achav is because he was an Ach Lashamayim. Achav was like a brother to the Ribbono Shel Olam. He was like a friend. And Av, why was he called the father? He was the Av La'ovdei Kochavim. He was the father of all the idol worshippers. So he had like a split personality, he had a double life. On the one hand, he felt very closely connected to the Ribbono Shel Olam. He was an Ach Lashamayim. He was like a brother, like a sibling. Felt very comfortable. On the other hand, he was an Av La'ovdei Kochavim. Says the Maharsha, what does it mean? How can a person live this kind of twisted life? How can that possibly be? Writes the Maharsha, Ach Lashamayim means when he went through hard times and things were very difficult for him, all of a sudden he was God's best friend. Sounds familiar? Happens in our lives. We live all of life, nobody thinks about the Ribbono Shel Olam, nobody actually cares. Then all of a sudden somebody gets sick in the family. Oh, we're having Tehillim rallies all night long, and we're making challah bakes all the time, and everyone's so committed, everyone's so involved. What, you weren't so involved last week, you didn't really care about the Ribbono Shel Olam before this happened. Okay, sometimes it happens, says the Gemara, he was an Ach Lashamayim. When he hit hard times, he remembered. There's no atheist in a foxhole. He remembered, there's a God out there in the world, and I have to figure out how to make good with him. And that was Achav in the bad times. Achav in the good times, when things were going well for him, was the Av L'Avodes Kochavim. He was the father who was trying to convince other people of his way of life. That's what he was busy with. So that's the kind of personality Achav was. Gives you just a picture of how evil Achav actually was. We move further. When we talk about an Oved Avodah Zarah, I mean, in general, it's something that's a difficult concept for us to understand. Who would ever bow down to an idol? Why do people care about such things? The brother of the Maharal writes, we no longer have a Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah. When was the last time you passed by a church and you wanted to go in and bow down or kiss the cross? How many people want to do that? How many people believe in that? You've seen a Buddha and you want to bow down to it, you don't understand it. It's very foreign from us. Says the brother of the Maharal, it's been replaced with something that's just as bad, which is Taivas HaMamon. Our lust for money is the same as Taivas HaVodah Zarah. So it used to be that, now it's this. This is the brother of the Maharal writing this. He didn't live today. He lived many years ago. But he's telling us that Taivas HaMamon has taken the place of Avodah Zarah, and we bow down and we worship people who have a lot of money, and we celebrate them, as crooked as they sometimes might be, and as dishonest as sometimes they are, not saying all of them, but sometimes you have a person who's dishonest, and yet community gives them a pass, they're rich, they're wealthy, prominent, nobody cares, as much as it doesn't make sense. If we would take a step back and ask ourselves, is this really somebody that I should be celebrating? We don't ask, says the brother of the Maharal. Basically, instead of the story of Achav being about Avodah Zarah, insert money, and you'll have the same story. Okay. Then the Gemara tells us a very surprising comment about Achav. Amar Rav Nachman, Achav shakul haya. What is shakul haya? Achav was somewhere in the middle. He had a lot of great schusim, a lot of great merit, and he also had a lot of terrible things that he did. So the Gemara says Achav is this like complicated person. He did a lot of great things, a lot of terrible things, and we don't know what to do with him. Ask the Gemara, Maskifla Rabbi Yosef, when it says in the Pasuk that Achav was a person who rebelled against the Ribbono Shel Olam, who built Avodah Zarah all over the country, you're mean to tell me he was Shakul Haya? What kind of schusim can he possibly have? What did he do? What did he do that would make him worthy of being called somebody who has a schus, or who has many schusim? Says the Gemara, Achav Vatran B'Mamono Haya. Achav was actually a very generous person. Vatran b'mamono haya means he was very open with his wealth, and he shared it with others. And it turns out that there were Talmidei Chachamim and good righteous people who used to come and take food from Achav's open table. And as a result of that, he had accrued many schusim over his lifetime. Now writes one of the Mefarshim, you think Achav was such a righteous person? No. He was not a righteous person. He was just very generous. See, he would always have an open spread in front of his home for anybody to come and take, for anybody to enjoy. And it so happens that some of the people who enjoyed were actually righteous people. And as a result of that, he gets a major schus, which is just an amazing concept. It's an amazing concept that you can do something without even realizing you're doing something good, and yet somehow you get reward for that. Amazing. So says the Gemara, because of that, Achav is somewhat considered to be an okay person. With all the Avodah Zarah that he served, with all the terrible things that he did, with all the people that he murdered, he was a Vatran b'mamon. Then the Psukim go further in Malachim Aleph. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives a tremendous tochacha to Achav, and he tells him, Hinani mevi alecha ra. Achav, I want you to know, we're coming to get you. Hinani mevi alecha ra. Now I want to ask you, if God forbid any of us were ever told by the Ribono Shel Olam himself, Hinani mevi alecha ra'a. We're not scared now during Aseres Yemei Tshuva because we don't believe that anything bad is actually ever going to happen to us. Life is status quo. Everything's been fine until now, so everything's going to continue to be fine. I was healthy last year, I'll be healthy this year. If I take a step back and think about how many people did not have that kind of life story from last year to this year, I would realize that it is serious. But nobody's thinking that. Everybody says things are okay, so they'll continue to be okay. I'm managing, I'll continue to manage. Imagine if the Ribono Shel Olam came to you and said, Hinani mevi alecha ra, I'm on to you. I know what you've been doing. Now it's time to punish you. Not in theory, maybe it's going to happen. No, now's the time that we're going to punish you. Do you think there was a human being in the world that wouldn't take that seriously? So Achav, as to be expected, is terrified. What's he supposed to do? Says the Pasuk, Vayhi kishma Achav es advarim ha'eila. When Achav hears from the Ribono Shel Olam, Hine mevi alecha ra, Achav is so afraid. Vayikra begadav, he rends his garments. Vayasem sak al besaro. Vayatsam vayishka basak. And he just can't function. The next day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes to Eliyahu HaNavi. And he says, Eliyahu, Haraisi ki nichna Achav milafanai? Do you see what just happened, Eliyahu? You know Achav, right? Eliyahu says, yes, of course. I know Achav, that famous, infamous Russia, the Oved Avodah Zarah, the one who kills people all over the place. God says, yes, but do you know what just happened? Haraisa, did you see, God says, ki nichna Achav milafanai? Did you see that Achav humbled himself before me? Did you notice what happened? I went to Achav. I told him, now life is going to become serious. Things are going to change. Hinani mevi alecha ra. And Achav actually took me seriously. And nichna Achav milafanai. Achav humbled himself before me. And because of that, says the Yerushalmi, Achav is considered to be somewhat of a Baal Tshuva. Because God scared him, and he actually reacted, and he humbled himself. What does it even mean, he humbled himself, says the Yerushalmi? Normally he would wake up at a certain time in the morning, he would have breakfast right away, and a royal breakfast. That week he decided, no royal breakfast. We're going to take it easy a little bit. We're going to have our meal 3 hours later than we normally would, because things are just not comfortable right now. That's the tshuva of Achav. ki nichna milafanav. So you think about that story, and you know that nobody who you will ever meet will be as bad of a person as Achav. And yet, Achav, as terrible as he was, all he needed to do was something very simple. And the Ribbono Shel Olam heard him, and the Ribbono Shel Olam accepted him. And what did he do? Nichna milafanav. He limited himself just a little bit. He humbled himself. He understood that life is serious. So do we have the ability during Aseres Yemei Tshuva to go through the process of tshuva that is described by Rabbeinu Yonah, to actually experience what it is to be a real Baal Tshuva? It's tough. It's hard. It may not be realistic for most people that you know. However, what is realistic is to realize that even the tshuva of Achav, ki nichna milafanav, just to tone it down a little bit, tone it down just a little bit during the Aseres Yemei Tshuva, and realize that there's something real that's happening. And that in itself is enough for the Ribbono Shel Olam to recognize that you're taking it seriously. There's a growing phenomenon that is spoken about in our culture that is referred to as denialism. What exactly is denialism? I saw an article a couple of years ago which I think is just as relevant today as the time that I saw it. It was in the Washington Post. They ran a story called Truth or Denial. From climate change to the anti-vaccine movement, is denial on the rise in America? It interested me. I was curious. Is denial on the rise in America? So they write the following. In January of this year, an esteemed astrophysicist and a chart-topping rapper went head-to-head in a public battle and debate about the curvature of the Earth. Insanity, right? That a rapper gets a platform with an astrophysicist who's been studying his whole life to understand the science of the curvature of the Earth, but yet you have a pop star who has followers, who therefore thinks it gives him a seat at the table, who therefore thinks he's a thought leader of the generation just because he has a microphone. So they have to go and debate about the curvature of the Earth. We're a scientifically advanced society. Computers in our pockets can do nearly anything we ask them. And soon enough, cars will be driving themselves. Since that time, they do. But there remains a significant population that will not accept what science tells us. What is going on, they ask? The answer lies in a deep-seated psychological response that helps us manage information that makes us uncomfortable. Denial is the deliberate, often psychologically motivated neglect of information that would be too upsetting or anxiety-provoking to allow into one's belief system. That is what Paul Applebaum said, who is the former head of the American Psychiatric Association. And he proceeds to give numerous examples in this article of this very common phenomenon that we're familiar with. I'm here with a very depressing conclusion, that knowledge is no longer power. If people don't like the implications of your knowledge, they will resist it, they will reject it, and they will even attack it. Knowledge alone does not yield appropriate action. We get the idea that if we just tell people what we know, they will change how they think and what they do. But that is simply not the case any longer. Now, each time we tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and there is nothing in our consciousness as Jews that we talk about more often than Yetzias Mitzrayim. Everything is Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim. Every Kiddush, every Yom Tov, even Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, which seems to have nothing to do with Yetzias Mitzrayim, somehow we still say Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim. Everything is Yetzias Mitzrayim. And every time we think about it, I am struck with the same thought. Think about the following. You have months and months and months of one Makkah after the other after the other. Here we are in Egypt. Put yourself back in that situation. 6 or 7 months into this dreadful, harrowing experience. Dam, Tzvardeya, Kinim, Arov, one after the other. Each one was 3 weeks at least that it lasted. And each time that Moshe spoke to the nation and made some kind of prediction, not only did it come true, but it came true to the last and final detail that Moshe Rabbeinu had forecasted. Everything he envisioned actually happened. And in advance, he tells Paro, and all the officers exactly how it's going to play out, and every single time he was right. Okay, here we are 6 or 7 months into the story, and yet Moshe Rabbeinu tells them, you know, there's an impending cyclone. There's a tornado that's about to come. You know it's called Makas Barad. Do you know that this is going to destroy everything here in Mitzrayim, here in Egypt? And yet there was a sizable population that didn't believe him. Why would you not believe Moshe Rabbeinu? Now, maybe you didn't believe him in the beginning, but you're 7 months into this horrific experience. Your lives have been upended. Your lives have been destroyed so many times. Why wouldn't you believe Moshe Rabbeinu? And yet the Torah says, Va'asher lo sam el libo es devar Hashem. Those who did not believe, those who didn't take it seriously, Va'yazov es avadav es mikneo basadeh. I don't have to take my animals inside. Nothing's really going to happen. Now notice, the Torah does not say that people didn't care about their money. It doesn't say, oh, I have so much money, so what do I care if I lose a little bit? It's not what it says. It doesn't say that they were so exceedingly wealthy that they were able to afford losing whatever was outside. Surprisingly, it also doesn't say that they were uninformed. You might say, in some countries, they don't share information, they don't warn people about what's coming, so nobody was prepared. That's not what it says. The Torah says that the community in Mitzrayim simply could not allow themselves to accept the indisputable, undeniable, incontrovertible truth. Va'asher lo sam el libo. People knew it, people understood it, but yet they couldn't translate it into anything practical in their lives. They could not bring themselves to any appropriate response, even though they had experienced so much in the last 7 months, and they knew this was going to happen. But asher lo sam el libo, that dissonance that they had, not allowing them to accept the reality of what was in front of them. And you might think that this irrational, bizarre phenomenon is something that highlights the corruptive and corrosive kind of community that the Egyptians were, and the culture at the time. But that's a terrible misconception. Because really, this is the natural disposition of most human beings. They have to create a dissonance. They have to live one way, hear certain things, and choose to just block it out. Because otherwise, I can't live with myself. So let me give you an example of the opposite. Not a corrupt, horrible person living in Egypt, living in Mitzrayim, but rather one of the greatest Jewish leaders of all time, David Melech Yisrael Chai V'Kaya. What happens with David HaMelech? David HaMelech is an otherwise thoughtful, considerate, prudent individual who's careful about what he does in his life, and yet David HaMelech also has this terrible dissonance. Let's see what happens. Sefer Shmuel, the Torah tells us, the Navi says, that Nasan HaNavi is very upset, and the Ribbono Shel Olam sends Nasan to speak to David HaMelech about the terrible, terrible sin that he has committed. What did David HaMelech do wrong? We might be familiar with the story. He sends out this man to battle in order that he should be able to marry the wife of this man. Now, can you imagine such a scheme? What a scandal. David HaMelech puts his eyes on a married woman. Not just that he wanted to do something wrong with her, he makes a whole scheme to figure out, how am I going to be permitted to marry her? So what am I going to do? I'm going to take her husband into the army. I'm going to send him out to war. I'm not just going to send him out to war. I'm going to make sure he's at the forefront of the battle. Usually those are the soldiers that get killed first. He makes sure that he's sent out to the front lines. And then David HaMelech has what he wants. Again, the Gemara discusses the intricacies of how he did it and why he did it. What's the story? Bottom line, you read the Navi, that's the story. Without getting complicated. That's the story. The Gemara says, Kala Omer David Chata Eino Alatoa. Okay, for another time. You read the Psukim in the Navi, it's clear something went terribly wrong. Nasan HaNavi comes to admonish David HaMelech. And he shows up and he decides, first of all, this is just an interesting tidbit. How exactly does Nasan HaNavi approach David HaMelech? Sometimes, as parents, your knee-jerk reaction is to get angry at someone who does something wrong. Your child does something wrong, you react. Somebody does something wrong to your child, you respond, you react. But you don't think, is this actually the best response? Sometimes reacting is not always the best response. Or reacting, but a thoughtful reaction would be a better response. So Nasan HaNavi tries to think, I've been charged with going to tell David HaMelech that he was wrong. But how am I going to break the news to him? What should I say? Any thinking person would say, David, look what you just did. It's horrible. Yeah, but any person on the receiving end of that will start denying and will start getting defensive and saying, no, I didn't mean to, it wasn't me. So Nasan understands that's not going to work. So he makes a thoughtful response. And what does he do? He tells him a story. And I'm so taken by it because imagine if instead of reacting to our children, we told them a story about what they just did and allowed them to understand the message just from the story itself. So says Nasan HaNavi, here's the story. He comes to David HaMelech and he says, would you mind if I shared an interesting story? I want to tell you what just happened. Something terrible just happened in the community. David says, of course, I'm the Melech. I would love to get involved. Tell me how I can help. So Nasan proceeds to tell him the following. Shnei Anashim Hayu Be'ir Achas. There were two neighbors, two acquaintances who lived in the same city. One of them was an usher. One of them was rich. He had a lot. He lived an abundant lifestyle. The Echad Rash, and one was impoverished. One had nothing. One was very poor. La'ashir hayatzonu bakar harbe miyod. The rich individual had a lot of cattle, a lot of livestock. Ula rashen kol, and the poor man really didn't have anything. Ki'im, what was the one thing he had? Kibsa achas ketana asher kana. He saved up money to be able to buy, to purchase on one occasion, a kibsa achas ketana. A small sheep, a goat, whatever it may have been, to be some kind of livelihood. At least he'll get milk from it, something. So he buys this one little sheep, one little goat, and yet his neighbor right next door has everything. All right. One fine day, his children were looking after the sheep, looking after it all the time. They were so mindful of it. The sheep was a member of the family. It was eating from his plate. It was drinking from his cup. It went down to sleep in his bed. Literally, it was like a child to him. Sounds familiar? People in our neighborhood, they have dogs. Looks like they treat it like a child. Okay, matihilo kevas. One fine day, the usher has a guest who comes to stay in his house. Now, it's appropriate that when a guest comes to my house, I offer them something to eat. I don't just have them stay over. I ask them, do you need anything? The guest says, you know, I've been traveling for a long time. I haven't had a hot meal. Of course we're going to take care of you. Look what we have here. We have everything you want. What does he do? Goes to his poor neighbor's backyard and takes the one sheep that his neighbor has, brings it into his house, steals it from his neighbor, slaughters it, prepares it for this beautiful feast that they're putting together, and then he serves a big meal with all of his friends. So Nasan HaNavi tells the story to David HaMelech. And he says, David, what do you say about such a thing? Can you imagine? This wealthy man who has everything in the world has to go and take the one important item in this neighbor's life and destroy his life? How can he do such a thing? David HaMelech says, "Vayomer al Nasan, Chai Hashem, I'm telling you," says David, "Ben Moves Ha'isha Osezos, I think we should kill this man. Look what you just did. Destroyed someone else's life. Look, they raised this sheep, this goat, for so many years. It's a member of the family. This is all they have in their lives. And he had to murder the sheep? For what? Why don't you go take your own sheep? Not just you violated the act of stealing, thievery, but beyond that, you destroyed the whole family. How can you do that? Ben Maves Ha'isha Zeh. Nasan HaNavi turns to him and he says, David, I want to tell you something. Atah Ha'ish. You are that man. David is shocked into reality and he says, what do you mean I am that man? He says, you have everything in the world. You're the Melech Yisrael. You have anything a person can ever ask for. and you have to go pick on this one family just because you put your eyes on this woman that you shouldn't have looked at, and because of that you came up with a whole scheme and you destroyed the whole family and you killed the father at battle just to marry this woman? What's wrong with you? Ataha ish, David. You are that man. It's a powerful story. It's amazing. But the point being, you could be David HaMelech, a very acutely aware person, and yet you don't see, you have a dissonance in your own life because you justify, you deny the reality. You don't want to accept it. It doesn't mean you're a bad person. It means you're a normal person. Normal people do this as a defense mechanism that they shouldn't have to face the reality, the terrible reality of their lives. And Nasan HaNavi turns to them and he says, you have to realize Ata HaIsh. You have to face the reality and realize you are that person. That's exactly what you did. I told you a story, but that story is a description of you. It's very hard to internalize. There aren't too many people that have a parsha named after them, but Yisro is one of them. Ask Rashi in the beginning of Parshas Yisro, Mashmua Shama Uba. Who is Yisro? Why did he decide to come and affiliate with the Jewish people? Says Rashi, because he heard about Kriyas Yamsuf, he heard about Melchemes HaMalek, he heard that this new fledgling nation somehow was able to overcome the enemy, somehow they went through the river, the ocean opened up for them, amazing story. And Yisro says, I have to be a part of this nation, I got to come and join in for whatever is happening. Let me ask you, you think Yisro was the only person in the world who heard about Kriyas Yamsuf? You think Yisro was the only one who knew about the Makos? Every human being in the world knew what was going on. Everybody heard about it. Yisro was the only person who heard and who said, I can no longer deny the reality. I need to do something because of what I experienced, because of what I know to be true. Most people don't do that. Most people just continue to live on life. Unshakable. I'm living my life, I'm comfortable, things are fine. But then when something happens, says the Torah, V'yadata hayom v'hashevosa el levavecha. It's not enough v'yadata. It's not enough just to know and to read everything and to be well educated. The question then is, v'hashevosa el levavecha, are you prepared to turn around, to look inward and to say, like David HaMelech, ata ha'ish, I am that person. This story happened and I experienced it because it wants me to understand that I am the person. I am the subject of the story. So we all live with inconsistencies, with contradictions, with inconsistencies in our lives. And it's confusing. It's confusing to really make sense of who a person is or who we are. But at least at this time of the year is the time to think about Ata HaIsh. We point out so many inconsistencies in other people's lives. And perhaps it's an opportunity for us to just think about some of the inconsistencies in our own lives. Yirmiyah HaNavi, when he is giving tochacha to the Jewish people, as he's forecasting the Churban Beis HaMikdash, Yirmiyah HaNavi says, Hineni nishbat oscha ala mareich lo chatasi, which means, in the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yirmiyah HaNavi says, Hineni nishbat oscha, I'm going to judge you, not because you've done things wrong. Everybody does things wrong. Some worse, some better. Everybody does things wrong. Adam ein tzadik ba'aretz asher yasa tova lo yechta. Yirmiyah HaNavi gives a message from the Ribono Shel Olam and he says, I'm going to look at what you've done wrong, not because you did something wrong, but Al amareich lo chatasi, because you convinced yourself and you've said lo chatasi, that I've done nothing wrong. It's okay to make a mistake, but at least be honest. Stop with the denial, says Yirmiyah HaNavi. At least be honest and accept the reality that ata ha'ish, that you are that person. David HaMelech in Tehillim writes the same. Chatasi odiacha v'amoni lo kisisi. David HaMelech says, I've made mistakes. And he says to the Ribono Shel Olam, Avoni lo kisisi, I'm not going to cover over, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I know I've done something wrong. I don't think there's a song that makes me more, I can't say upset, because I don't really get upset about this, uncomfortable, I should say, than the song, Every Yid's a Big Tzaddik. That song really bothers me. Every Yid is not a big tzaddik. It's not true. Some Jews are great tzaddikim and some Jews are horrible. Child molesters are terrible people. They're not a big tzaddik. Not. People who steal money and ruin other people's lives are not big tzaddikim. Maybe they'll do tshuva. That's not your business. But they're not big tzaddikim. Let's not convince our children that every Yid is a big tzaddik. It's not true. We all do things wrong. Some people do horrible things that they can't fix. But David HaMelech says, let's not sugarcoat it. Stop telling ourselves that every single person is a big tzaddik. It's not the case. Be honest. Atah HaIsh, say, I have things that make me not a tzaddik. I have things that I need to work on, and not everything in my life is always perfect. And I don't always make the right decisions, and neither does anybody else. I try not to hurt people. If I make mistakes, I hope they're ben adam lamakom, not ben adam lachavero. The Gemara says, ben adam lachavero mistakes, ein yom ha-kippur mechaper. We're coming to Yom Kippur. You can take care of lots of problems on Yom Kippur, but you can't take care of ben adam lachavero issues, ad shi yiratzas chavero. You hurt somebody else? You need to figure out how to do something about what you've done to them. Says David HaMelech, let's not hide it. In Mishlei, Shlomo HaMelech says, Umode ve'ozav yirucham, mechaseb sha'av lo yatzliach. Somebody who just covers everything over and sugarcoats everything in life, lo yatzliach. Rather, said Shlomo HaMelech, mode ve'ozav yirucham. Don't live a life of denial, of non-acceptance. Live a life of mode ve'ozav yirucham. Be honest with the Ribono Shel Olam. Be honest and say, I have weaknesses, there are things I do wrong, let's deal with it. Let's deal with it. Ask yourself, who was a greater tzaddik? Shaul HaMelech or David HaMelech? What would you say? David HaMelech was a greater tzaddik. The answer to that is absolutely wrong. Shaul HaMelech, I don't know who said that, I wasn't looking, but it's a good guess. It's a good guess because David HaMelech is the famous David HaMelech. And here we are thousands of years later still talking about him. And who's talking about Shaul? Once in a while when we learn Navi, we remember Shaul HaMelech, but we don't talk about him so often. Who is a greater tzaddik? Shaul or David? Well, says the Gemara, quoting a pasuk in Sefer Shmuel. Pasuk tells us, Ben Shana Shaul b'malcho. When Shaul HaMelech became king, you heard that, Ben Shana Shaul b'malcho. What does it mean? He was 1 year old. Ask the Gemara, 1 year old? You can be the most mature 1 year old. You can't be the king of a country. Impossible. So what does it mean, Shaul HaMelech was 1 year old? Says the Gemara, means, of course he wasn't 1 year old, he was a mature adult. Rather, he was kiben shana lechet. As innocent as a young 1 year old child is, that is what Shaul HaMelech was at 40 years old. Perfect, innocent person who did nothing wrong in his life. Who the Ribono Shel Olam had an affinity for. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, if you're going to choose a melech, it has to be Shaul. Why? Because there's nobody like him in the world. Shaul HaMelech was the greatest of the greats. What happens? What happens in his life? David HaMelech and Shaul HaMelech were the two famous kings. Shaul HaMelech is this perfect human being. Everything's great. He's kiven shana lechet. He's as innocent as one can ever be. And then, one of the first instructions that he's given is to go wage war with Amalek. That's the job of a Jewish king. One of the first things he needs to do, says the Rambam. So Shaul HaMelech does as he is instructed. And how well does he do his job? Absolutely incredibly well, by the way. 99.5% of the way he does everything he was supposed to do. He wipes out Amalek, takes care of everything. He leaves over, and again, it wasn't because he was trying to go against the Ribono Shel Olam. He decides, he makes a cheshbon, he makes a calculation for whatever reason, the Malbim explains it. He decides he's going to leave over one last segment of the population of Amalek and not finish them off. But everything else he did exactly the way he was supposed to. And what happens? HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends a Navi to speak to him. Kara Hashem es mamlachtecha. We've had enough of you, Shaul. We don't tolerate people like you. Takes away the malchus from him. And by the way, the Ribbono Shel Olam says, he sticks it to him and he says, and we're going to give it to someone who's better than you. Like if it wasn't bad enough that we take you away, we're going to find someone even better than you. That's what the Navi says. Devastating. One mistake in his life. One mistake in his life. And not even a mistake. The tiniest mistake. For a cheshbon, for a reason. He didn't just haphazardly do that. He had a rationale for what he did. David HaMelech. Let's talk about him for a moment. David HaMelech makes two mistakes. One of them is not just a mistake. One of them, as we mentioned, is beyond the terrible destruction that he caused in this family by sending the husband out to war, taking this woman. Beyond that, imagine the Chilul Hashem. Imagine what would happen, Rachmana Litzlan, if you had, I don't want to say a member of our community. Imagine a president of the United States puts his eyes on some intern somewhere, if such a thing could happen, and she's married, and he decides, you know, it would be terrible if the president of the United States did something like that. So what's he going to do? Makes a whole scheme, kills the husband, sends him to Afghanistan, jumps off a plane, whatever it is, terrible things. And the husband dies. And now the president gets his wish. Imagine, aside from the terrible personal sin that he's done to ruin a family and to destroy a world, the Chilul Hashem, the whole world is going to talk about this. It's going to be on the front page of every newspaper. So David HaMelech, this is not just you did something wrong, you ruined someone's life, you personally hurt someone. No, no, no. This is so much worse than that. This is Chilul Hashem beyond belief. This is the entire Jewish community is talking. Did you hear? This is the king that we put up to rule over us. David HaMelech, look what he just did. Can you imagine what was going on at the Shabbos tables that week? David HaMelech. And yet, somehow, David HaMelech is forgiven. He gets a pass. And he doesn't lose his seat as being the king. So the Gemara asked the question, how could it be? Shaul HaMelech is wonderful, perfect human being, makes one mistake, one small mistake. Nobody really would have known about it. The Navi comes, kicks him out of his position. He's gone. He's finished. David HaMelech makes the biggest colossal Chilul Hashem ever imaginable, and yet he gets away with it. How can that be? The answer is, Chazal tell us, the difference lies in their reaction to their mistake. What was the reaction of Shaul HaMelech when it was brought to his attention that he did something wrong? And what was the reaction of David HaMelech when it was brought to his attention that he did something wrong? So you look in Sefer Shmuel, and the Navi tells us how he approaches Shaul HaMelech, and he tells him, you know, something went wrong. And Shaul says, Baruch Atah Hashem, Hakimosi es Dvar Hashem, look what I just did. I wiped out Amalek, everything's great, everything's wonderful. And the Navi says, one second, I think there's something that went wrong. And Shaul HaMelech insists, what do you mean? I did everything that God wanted of me to do. Yes, after a whole conversation, yes, I left something over I didn't do exactly, but he was not willing to take ownership of his mistake. At that moment, Shaul HaMelech is told, Ma'asta es devar Hashem. Vayim ascha Hashem lemelech. It's not about the mistake that you made. It's about the dissonance that you have in your mind. It's about the fact that you can't take responsibility for that which you have done. It's that now that you're confronted with the reality, you cannot bring yourself to accept it. That's the problem. Contrast that with David HaMelech, who makes the biggest Chilul Hashem, terrible story, And we read it in great detail, and yet, when he is confronted, he says right away, Chatasi l'Hashem. I'm not going to give excuses. I'm not going to try to live in denial and pretend this is not what happened, I didn't mean to, I should have done this, I meant to do that. No, David HaMelech is honest. I'm a human being. I did something very wrong. Chatasi l'Hashem. And the Ribono Shel Olam says, if you understand that, if you're humble enough to understand that, then there's a path forward for you. If you're too arrogant and you can't take responsibility, then there is no chance. And this is a theme that we find. Look at Adam HaRishon. The Ribono Shel Olam does not punish Adam HaRishon immediately after he does something wrong. It is only once HaKadosh Baruch Hu confronts him and he says, Hamina Eitz Asher Tzivisicha Levilti Achol Mimenu Achalt. When the Ribono Shel Olam asks him, could it be that you ate from that tree that I instructed you not to get close to? And he says, Ha'isha, it's not me, it's Chava. Why'd you put her in my life? Just be honest. Just say to the Ribono Shel Olam, yes, I made a mistake. I did something wrong. Ki hu yada yitzreinu, you know that you created me with all kinds of conflicting feelings inside. And sometimes it pushes me to do something that I really don't want to do, that I know in my heart of hearts I should not have done. But I made a mistake. It's not what happens. And at that moment, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you're out of Gan Eden. It's not for doing the Aveira. It's not for doing something wrong. It's for not taking responsibility. Cain kills Hevel, as we know. HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears to Cain and he says, Ei Hevel Achicha, where is your brother? And instead of being honest with the Ribono Shel Olam and saying, we got in a fight, I took it too far, I was jealous, I was upset, I killed him, he responds, HaShomer Achi Anochi, what does that do with me? Go talk to Hevel, it's not my problem. And it's only then that HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds to him and says, now you're going to be punished. Everyone does things wrong, and that's okay. It's understandable. The Ribono Shel Olam, for one, understands it. But says the Pasuk in Tehillim, Mechaseb Sha'av Lo Yatzliach, Umodev Ozev Yerucham. Somebody who lives a life of denial and is not willing to face the reality, Mechaseb Sha'av, convinces themselves that every yid's a big tzaddik, Lo Yatzliach. Mode Va'ozev Yerucham. Somebody who's willing to live an honest life, who's willing to be honest with the Ribono Shel Olam, and to say, I'm not perfect, and I'm comfortable with that. But I'm honest. I'm an honest person. I'm self-aware. I don't live a life of cognitive dissonance. I don't live a life of denial. I live a life of saying, Atah Ha'ish, of understanding that I am the subject of the story every so often, and I need to internalize what that means for myself. So as we experience the Aseres Yemei Tshuva, and we come closer to Yom HaKippurim, we remind ourselves of the story of Tshuva, but we remind ourselves in particular of the reality that a person can even live a life as extreme as Achav, and yet the Ribono Shel Olam himself says about Achav, Hara'isa ki nichna Achav milafanai. Do you see that Achav has become self-aware? Do you see that Achav has humbled himself, has come to the reality of where his life is, has come to an understanding that you cannot be an Ach l'shamayim and an Av to Avodas Kochavim? It just doesn't work. And for at least a fleeting moment of Achav's life, he came to that understanding. And that was enough. And the Ribono Shel Olam was prepared to accept him back just for that alone, with all of his complicated history. Which means that so much of the process of tshuva is not a recognition that I am perfect or that I plan to be perfect, but rather a recognition of the reality of who I am, a recognition of the things that may have gone wrong and the things that may need to be fixed, the things that may need to be considered. That's really what the days of Aseret Yemei Teshuva are all about. And that, says Rabbeinu Yonah, is why a person should take these days to make themselves realize that things cannot just be the same. He says, don't go to work. Most of us are not holding by not going to work. But let's be real. We don't need to do everything that we do on a regular day. A little bit more time for self-reflection. A little bit of time to just look inward and realize about all the inconsistencies in our lives. Ataha ish, you are that person. We are that person. And we have an opportunity to recognize the power and the profundity of tefillah, the power and the essence of tshuva, and to really give ourselves the chance, Dirshu Hashem behimatz'o, to say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we appreciate the fact that He is here. Let me close. I said I'm going to close, but I'm going to really close with this story. How many of you have heard of Dayan Weiss? Dayan Weiss was the Dayan of the Eidech HaRedes in Yerushalayim. He passed away about a year and a half or 2 years ago. Reb Yitzchok Tuvia Weiss. He was a survivor of the Holocaust, and he was one of the young children who was on the Kinder transport. The Kinder transport was a terrible story, but it was basically a facade where they were trying to show the world how kind and generous they were. And they took 200 children or so and put them on a train and brought them to England. You see, we're taking care of the kids and we would never murder them. Of course, that's not what was going on behind the front lines in Germany itself and in Poland and Hungary. But the Kinder transport is what it was. Dayan Weiss tells the story about how one day when they got to England, they were told as children that the King of England is going to come and visit them. He wanted to see what the children were up to. He wanted to see what was happening. He wanted to hear for himself. So they were told exactly how one is supposed to behave when the King of England comes. How do you bow? And what exactly do you say? How do you refer to him? Are you supposed to say anything or do you just remain quiet? And they put a bunch of seats in the front. They had a throne that was brought particularly for the king to sit in. And they rehearsed exactly what they were supposed to do when the king came. Everybody was sitting, these 200 children were sitting in their seats. And the king, right before he gets up to speak, one child jumps out from the group, starts screaming on the top of his lungs. This is all a fake. They saved me, but my parents are being killed back in Poland, back in Germany. Don't trust anything you see. My parents are being killed. What are you going to do to save my parents? I don't care. What are you doing to save my family? The king was startled. This doesn't happen. Against every line of protocol. Dayan Weiss told the story that the king sat there with this child, asked him for the details of where his family was from, and he said, don't worry, I'll save your parents. And he did. The king put a request in, and they saved this kid's parents. Dayan Weiss said his whole life he bemoaned the fact that he watched that child run up to the king with such disrespect because he knew, Ki lecha levad einenu teluyos. You are the only one who can save my parents. I don't care about respect right now. I need to save my parents. And it worked. And Dayan Weiss said, I asked myself, why didn't I think to be like that child? I could have done the same thing. But I was too worried about the protocol, and I was worried about where I was supposed to be and how I'm supposed to behave, instead of worrying about what I'm really supposed to worry about, which is my parents are dying back in Germany, and I need to save them. And he said every year, Rosh Hashanah v'Yom HaKippurim, he thought about that story. And he reminded himself of the reality of Dirshu Hashem b'himatzo, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes for an audience with us, and we have the opportunity to break the protocol and to say to the Ribbono Shel Olam, Ki lecha levad einenu teluyos. Our children are struggling. Our parents are suffering. Our brothers and sisters are going through a hard time. You're going to follow the protocol. You're going to say every word in the machzer and not offer one word of personal bakasha to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Not say one thing in the course of this week about something that actually matters to you. about something that's important, when you're standing in front of the king who can actually make your life different. And Dian Weiss said how he regretted this his whole life because his family died as a result of his not understanding the opportunity of that moment. But somebody else did. Don't allow ourselves to be the people who turn around and are jealous of those who took this opportunity of Aseres Yemei Tshuva, of Yom HaKippurim, to talk to the Ribono Shel Olam and to talk to him about the things that are really important to us, that really matter in our lives. Let's use it, says Dian Weiss, as a chance to remind ourselves that it is Dirshu Hashem Bihi Matzo, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is closer to us at this time of the year, that he engages us, that he invites us for an audience, and that means it's our opportunity to be honest with him. It's our opportunity to ask him for things, to discuss different things with him, and to make the most of this very auspicious and special time of the year. I wish everyone a Gemar Chasima Tova.